right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Susnow.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow. Thanks for joining in. And every week, I promise you, I'm going to have somebody who I consider a cutting-edge thought leader, somebody who has something that's going to enlighten us, inspire us. And sometimes people contact me, and sometimes I contact people. And I was contacted by the representatives of the person I have today, Bruce Buff. He wrote a book called The Soul of the Matter. And for me, the word soul always has a lot of connotation, and you know my new book, The Soul of Uncertainty, is coming out real soon. So when I saw this title, I said, okay, I want to have him on my show, especially when I read the book. He made this into a novel, a thriller, and that discussion of science and religion and how to combine the two, and I just thought it would be a fascinating conversation. So thanks, Bruce, for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I'm looking forward to us having an interesting conversation, and we were talking off air before the show started, and I always have the premise that when anybody writes a book, especially a subject like this or my book about uncertainty, it's usually because there's something for themselves that they're intrigued by, that they want to discover, that they're puzzled by. And so I'm going to make that assumption, and if I'm wrong, please forgive me. But so I'm assuming that this idea of soul and where do we fit in with our soul in terms of, you know, the Big Bang Theory about creative design, is there a creative being and all the force and all this kind of stuff, I assume that was something that you thought about more than once.
Well, it actually evolved, to tell you the truth. I mean, it started off in 1986 with the idea, so I'll tell you how long it took. And it was because of a cover, might have been Time Magazine, not sure, that said we all had 20% of DNA or so identical. And I thought, gee, wouldn't it be interesting if there was something like a message or something hidden in there? And so it was pure fiction and just wanted to have fun. And
okay, Ken,
and then
let me interrupt you, Bruce. What you said, you're saying that we all have this 20% of our DNA is the same as everybody else's?
Well, that's what the cover said back then. I don't think it's that way now. You know, there is a lot of commonality. I'm not an expert in it. There is a lot of commonality. But it made it sound like this was like this junk DNA or unused DNA that was identical. I'm thinking, So I was just fanciful. I didn't know the science. I wasn't making a scientific statement. I was just thinking, hey, that might be an interesting idea for a story. That was it. And then when I started researching it, well, first, after that, in November of 99, I'm sitting at my computer and I'm looking at the pixels on the screen. It pops into my head, well, what connects these bits and bytes inside the computer and the pixels on the screen into a thought or an image or a word? And I realized at that point that, you know, something more than physical matter has to be involved in our daily experience of consciousness. And then when I finally sat down to write the story in 2006, I started to research how could a message be embedded in DNA in a way that would be credible. Again, strictly fiction when I'm thinking about it. And when I did the research, I found out then that there's not nearly enough DNA to make you and me, unless complex processing greatly expands the amount of DNA into a much larger set of instructions. And then it was like, holy cow, what does this all mean? So it evolved into that.
So how did you go about coming up with your ideas and this whole theory and everything? You must have done a lot of research, huh?
I did some. I mean, I knew some basics already, but I did some. I mean, on the consciousness side, there are a few books that are kind of central to it, but also I tried to think through what would really have to be involved if it was only physical matter involved in the brain and the brain was only in the mind. And so I kind of worked through that myself a bit and then checked it against other things. And then the DNA, I came to believe that it wasn't there strictly through an unguided, purposeless process. We may have evolved, but it wasn't just like, you know, throwing dice in the air type of thing. And so I started researching that more.
Mm-hmm. So what about, like, so in the book, more or less, this is a question, and raises both sides of this idea of intelligent design or Darwin. How do you reconcile the two ideas of, you know, the survival of the fittest? We're in this process of evolution, and then the creative force is created at all. What's your take on all of this?
I'm sorry, reconciling what two ideas?
The two ideas of let's say Darwin and intelligent design. How do you, this idea that we're
pretty easy, actually. In a lot of ways, it's really easy to reconcile that, at least in myself. I mean, the Darwinian view of evolution is change over time, right? And it posits that the causality of that change is, you know, unguided, and then that it marches inexorably to higher forms of life. And, you know, intelligent design doesn't argue against change over time, but it says that there's a purposeful creative agent behind it. And I think there's a lot of plausibility to that. I mean, in fact, if you look at Darwinism in its full thing, it doesn't explain anything about how the first molecules became a living cell.
Other than saying
that if you do something enough, the thing that's going to persist by chance is the thing that's going to make things better. And, you know, that's an assertion, not a scientific proof.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is they perfectly dovetail.
I think Darwin's view is that when things change in the environment, that there's always this change going on in physical organisms, that the change is always happening, when the environment's not changing, things that persist are the things that are best suited to that particular environment. And then when the environment changes, the organisms that persist are the ones that are best suited to that new environment. And so there's this progression in species to this, you know, more suitable, more adaptable, more capable set of organisms. So that's its premise. But the premise is that those changes is happening by on their own without any direction, and that the adaptation is something that just physically works at that point in time. Intelligent design says, no, that's not a sufficient process. There's not enough information in the world to explain all of that, and that there are biological paths that can't come about strictly processed, so that there's a design agent behind everything. So they differ greatly in that regard, but neither one of them says that, hey, things can't change.
Uh-huh. Well, what about I see that they do kind of fit nicely in a way, you know, like, yeah, we have this Darwinian theory, but what was the beginning all about? What created the beginning? What's your thought about that? Like, I was intrigued by the idea of this whole subject. Like, what's your sense of how this universe came into being? I mean, do you believe in the Big Bang theory or what?
I mean, I'm fine with it either way, to be honest. I accept that that's what science thinks is is how it came about now, and so but to go from there to the conditions that are necessary for life, that the universe had to be tuned in a very particular way for life to come into existence, I think that indicates a purposefulness. And I go into parts of this in the book, of course, but also the fact that, you know, in my view, what we experience through consciousness is through an immaterial mind, that physical matter isn't enough, that anything that sees or perceives, you know, even mice, you know, has a degree of an immaterial mind or a soul, if you like, though they differ in kind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That turns what Darwin called natural selection into like intelligent selection.
Right. Because
in physics, you have to account for all the variables that are involved in the outcome. And so if making a choice or adapting to view the mind is a factor, then it's not a strictly material process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I make the argument in essence that every moment of our life is our soul in action.
Mm-hmm. What's your concept of soul? I mean, that's something I think about a lot because my book, like I say, was A Soul of Uncertainty. I mean, do you what's your sense of let's say soul and spirit?
Do you distinguish
soul and spirit?
No, not really. I look at the brain as kind of like the motherboard in a computer, and the soul is the intel inside. And the thing about the soul is it gives us unity to our life. It makes us more than frames in a movie picture unfolding, and it means that the continuity of our existence actually has meaning. You know, if all we were in physical matter, then all we would be is time slices of experiences, and if the experiences stop, so what? If we made one choice versus that choice, so what? And then there's really no ultimate meaning to life. And, you know, I want to say I didn't start down this path to prove that. I just found myself going down that path as I learned more about it.
Uh-huh. So why did you choose, I mean, as you got into this, you went ahead in a way you could have really done this as nonfiction too, right? Your book, but you chose fiction.
Absolutely, I thought about that. No, you're dead on. And the reason I did it in fiction is, first off, I wanted to have fun, and I wanted my readers to have fun. So while I have a lot of these concepts in the book, I wanted it to be a story that, as a thriller, when they read it, they felt, gee, that was exciting and worth my money to read. And I also thought I could reach a broader audience this way. And I'm not a credentialed scientist in many of these, in fact, all these fields, right? So for me to get a peer-reviewed article or anything of that nature, the chances of that were about zero. So I thought this was a better way of expressing my views and having fun and creating an entertaining experience for readers.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I made the same decision and chose a fable. When I talk about Soul of Uncertainty rather than a nonfiction book, because there were so many books already written about uncertainty that were nonfiction. And I just, again, it's more fun. It was more fun for me this way to write a story. And I have to say, I really enjoyed your book. I mean, I really did. It was, as they say, a thriller, and it was fun. And what I liked about it is that, you know, again, even though it was fiction, I didn't know certain things if this was like true based on scientific research that you did, or just stuff that you were just kind of speculating, and it was hard
to
tell.
It's all of that.
Yeah.
It's all of
that.
Which is why I put the appendix in there that said, here's what I think is scientifically provable, here's what I think is plausible, and here's what I'm making up just for fun for you and me.
Well, you did a great job.
Well, thank you.
Like I say, I get a lot of books that are sent to me, and I can't read them all, or I read parts of some. But I read your whole book, and it was fun. Like I say, it was fun, and I've read a lot, and I've wrote a couple of nonfiction books, and now I'm working on Soul. But I find in my own personal reading, I usually read mystery novels. It's a little lighter and it's more fun. And so, you know, what I'm curious about is what What's your background? What is there something in your background that got you into wanting to explore this? Or, I mean, did you have a kind of background? Did you have?
I have many quirks in my personality, and one is I always want to know how things work, and I always want to try and figure out how they work. And so I don't accept at face value. Someone says, you know, this causes that. And I said, well, I want to know how. By what method does that happen?
Right.
I'm always asking myself questions.
Curious.
Yeah, and in a practical way, I want to see that it works. So I built tree forts and go-karts as a kid. And I would start out pre-med, so I had some natural sciences, and so I have a basic understanding. And I had some computer background and whatnot, and it just goes from there. I'm always analytically asking, you know, the how and the why.
I'm that way too. You know, I'm kind of like I'm into music, and I hear something really interesting that somebody's playing. And I'm going, how's he doing that? What's he doing? To kind of explore, you know, into a certain intricate way, and it adds that richness to life. So, how can people get your book? How can people get your book?
Well, it's available anywhere you buy books. It's available anywhere you buy books: Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Books a Million, anywhere, and you know, online or in stores. So I'm fortunate with that. I've had good reviews from Publisher Weeklies and Barnes and Noble and a few other places. And you can learn more on my website at brucebuff, brucebuff.com, which also has links to my Facebook page and a contact form to get in touch with me. So I'm readily accessible.
So you want to tell us that website again?
It's brucebuff, that's one word, brucebuff.com.
Right. And we mean buff. We don't mean necessarily that you're like a Mr. Adonis. That you're real buff.
No, that's
your real name.
No, that's it really is. And it was funny. I went to Boulder, Colorado once, and that's the University of Colorado is there, and their nickname is the Buffaloes, but they go by Buff everywhere. So I'm walking around town, and everywhere I look, it says Go Buffs, and it's like, I want a piece of this.
Feel right at home, huh?
Yeah.
I want to live there.
I want royalties on what they were selling on the library.
And you have a family? You got kids and everything?
Yep, I have 5 kids. The youngest is a ninth grader, and the oldest has been out for a couple of years of college. So.
And what do they think when you wrote this book?
Well, the original dedication of the book was going to be, this would have been to my wife if she had ever read it. There was a lot of skepticism because they know that, you know, I'm a mechanically oriented person who's not necessarily a gifted writer, and the challenges of writing fiction for even someone who studied it are enormous. So it was kind of like this really out there task. But, you know, late in the game, I had some great support from our freelance editors and good feedback. And when I got an agent, they started taking it seriously. And when I got a publisher, they took it really seriously. So they're very supportive, and I'm very lucky to have them.
Right. And you still have a regular day job?
Oh, yes. That's an interesting challenge. Yeah, working a lot of hours.
And what's your regular day job?
Well, I came off of cybersecurity recently for a big financial institution in Wall Street, and now I'm working in management consulting in, I'd say, an important area of defense, and I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. And are you like, you know, what I'm curious about is do you have like a spiritual practice that you do or that's part of your life?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a practicing Catholic, and I didn't set down to go down this path to like reinforce my faith or to push it on others. And I deliberately keep the faith aspect of this book at a generic high level because I'm trying to get people to think about the faith question in general. I'm not trying to tell them that you have to be Catholic per se. So,
right, and I think you did, by the way, Bruce, I think you did really a good job doing that because there wasn't necessarily, you know, like a viewpoint, you know. Which,
right.
It wasn't like a viewpoint, and it was more, you know, you kind of allowed.
More an exploration.
Allowed,
does, sorry?
Go ahead.
It's more of an exploration of, does God exist? And if he does, what type of God fits with our everyday experience, including permitting the suffering that we see going on around all of us? And does that give, what type of meaning does that mean in terms of life? So I keep it at that level.
Right. So what about your concept of God? What is your concept of God?
Well, since I believe we all have real souls, not something that, you know, pops into existence when we die, that's really the essence of who we are now, and that we actually live primarily in a spiritual existence, not a physical existence, and that I think life ultimately has meaning every moment of our life, and that type of God gives us this soul, and that there has to be an explanation for how that type of being, who might, has a greater sense of what's good than we do, still permits suffering, you know, what can explain all that? And I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that there's a personal God as opposed to a generic force, because there's too much specificity in how we got here and how each new being comes into existence for that to be just like water, right? Water all around us, as opposed to there's specific intent at all times.
So you think there's like one being that just kind of influences everybody?
Well,
that's your belief.
I mean, if you turn the question around the way, and this is what I do in the book too, I try and turn questions around, right? Rather than saying this is what we experience in our life, and therefore there can't be a God of this type.
Right.
I turn it around and say, well, if we experience this in our life and our sense of goodness means anything, then what could fit with that? So I argue backwards on what type of God that might be. And so I come to the conclusion, you know, that there is a personal God, a God, because otherwise, I mean, you don't see, in essence, the silence, like the Martin Scorsese movie that's out now, the silence provides answers as much as questions, because there wouldn't be a feeling of silence if there was a multitude of gods just dipping in and out of our life. We would see that, and we don't.
So you saw, you know, by the way, that movie just came out here. I definitely want to see it.
Yep.
You recommend it?
I'm looking forward to it. I want to see it, and I think it's worth understanding. But it's one of those movies that, you know, it's going to be so hard hitting. You're not going to say, "Hey, I'm going there to enjoy it," per se. You know.
Yeah.
It's to experience life. Think about it.
You know what I like to do is, as I think I mentioned before, I mean, for a lot of people right now, especially today, it's time of change and uncertainty, and what gives you hope right now?
Well, the human race is still here after all the things that could have gone wrong and did go wrong from the beginning of recorded time, in essence, right? So we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
We still have
mm-hmm.
the sense of what it means to be a human being in the good sense, and we still have the sense of wanting to be something better and to have meaning in our lives. And I think, you know, there's that. Every appetite has a real objective. So I think that what we're really searching for, we'll find.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, life is tough. You know, life is very, very tough. That's for sure.
And what inspires you right now?
The spirit of people who live in horrific times and somehow keep going without despair. And we live in a bubble in the Western world and in this particular time period, because of most of human history, it's just been really hard stuff, and it really is still hard stuff around the world. And we take it for granted that it's going to persist this way, and we should be thankful for what we have right now.
Mm-hmm. Gratitude.
Absolutely.
So you're grateful for life itself and for all these things that are, you know, happening in your life. I mean, it's amazing. you know, this channel of thought came through you, and it's kind of amazing how for you it all evolved, you know, this idea, and then you ended up getting an agent and a publisher, and you came up with a great story. And do you have any thoughts about the next book?
Oh yeah.
By the way, I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Bruce Buff, the author of The Soul of the Matter, is the guest, and we're just kind of wrapping up our show. And so what's another book out there for you?
It's a 3-book series. I planned it to be multi-books in the beginning. And so, interestingly enough, the first book, I had to take the last quarter off when I got my agent and pitched it to publishers. And so that last quarter now, so the ending of book one has now become the ending of book two.
Whoa.
And what was book two is now book three. So it's a deliberate arc, because I'm trying to, and you can't do it all at once because otherwise you weigh the readers down, but I'm trying to provide a complete kind of examination of what it means to be human, how we got here, what we experience, and what it all might mean. And so that takes 3 books. And so it's all completely plotted out. I can tell you how it ends, but I won't.
Right. Well, I want to thank you, Bruce, for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. I found our conversation very provocative, enlightening, thought-provoking. And you know, also, I just want to acknowledge you, because I know, you know, all the hard work it takes to write a book. It can be frustrating at times. It can be lonely at times. And you know, you have to be really focused and determined, but it's also very exciting, and I can tell from our conversation you found this process also very exciting.
Oh, very much so. Thank you.
Yeah. So thanks for being the guest, and I wish you well, and a reminder, listeners, that every week I have a guest, somebody who I think you're going to enjoy and be inspired by. And until next week, journey on until we have our next conversation. So again, thank you, Bruce Buff, the author of The Soul of the Matter, for being our guest on the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.